Welcome to another episode of No Plans to Merge. I'm your host, Caleb Porzio.
I'm also your host, Daniel Colburn.
That's right. And we are here with another episode for you and your ears.
And for you, the listener.
We've been gone. We've been in and out.
We took a brief hiatus, animal style.
Also, I have a sound for the listener. I waited to open this so that they could hear it.
You're so kind, sound, Caleb.
So you're welcome.
You're kind to our listeners.
Come on now.
That's refreshing.
That's one of the greatest
sounds in the entire world. Right now. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'll take a sip, and then I'll also zoom in on the burp that comes from it when it happens, so the listener can really experience it.
We're kind to our listeners.
We are. D-Cole, how you been, man?
I've been good, man. It's been a while.
It's been a hot while.
You had some stuff. I had some stuff. I had some animal health issues.
Oh, yeah.
My poor pup, Patoon, Charlotte's parents came to visit us, as they do, and young Patoon hadn't seen him in a few months, and she got real excited. And she did like figure eights in the yard, you know, like when a dog runs super fast in figure eights, you know, that move.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So she did one of those. And then the next day she was like limping and she was like totally couldn't walk at all. And apparently she herniated a disc in her back.
Ooh.
So we had to have the spinal surgery on the dog. We had to drive to Greenville. We had like an emergency drive to Greenville, South Carolina to like handle the dog back issues. It was very scary and not inexpensive at all. So but anyway, the dog is recovering. She has to live in a crate for 4 weeks, which is unfortunate because she hates that.
Like has to exist in the crate solely.
She can go for walks to the backyard, but we have to like hover over her.
Wow.
With a leash in the backyard, because if she goes down, like if her legs collapse for some reason, because she's still a little weak, a little wobbly.
Yeah.
And if she goes down, she could like hit her face on the ground and like knock her neck back out of alignment.
Oh my gosh.
So it's like very like while she's healing, it's like take no risks of her damaging herself.
That is an absolute nightmare.
Yeah. So we had to cancel a New York vacation pre-Laricon because we can't board the dog in this condition. So we were going to go to New York like a week early and like be in New York doing cool stuff. But it's like, first of all, we just spent a vacation's worth of money on this dog.
Right.
Second of all, that's just not logistically possible. But all things considered, I would much rather have a healthy dog than a New York vacation.
Isn't that the truth?
Ain't that the truth?
Well, that's good news, sort of.
Yeah, good news, bad news.
Yep.
Good news for people who like bad news.
Exactly. That's why it's good news. D-Cole.
Yes?
A couple quick announcements here.
Ooh, this is so exciting.
Oh, nothing major. Just, you know, the normal Caleb
minor
updates.
Announcements.
Caleb's uh-huh. corner.
Caleb's bum, 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 bum. It's Caleb's corner.
Did it. Yeah, so stickers. Stickers. Stickers, stickers, stickers.
Stickers.
Ye listener, you. Ye know that by the time this hits your ears.
Ye knowest.
You know
ye
what?
Knowest.
We'll probably, I don't know when we're launching this. It's possible that we launched this before I even launched the stickers. But I'm launching stickers, sticker packs. So 15 stickers, Laravel stickers, working on the landing page, making it real nice. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be $15 per pack. And
ooh.
Yep. So
I like
that's
it.
That. $15, that's it. Free shipping, 15 stickers. So
perfect.
That's going to be fun. That's been super fun, actually, and I can't wait to write up a blog post about the whole process so I can...
Have you disclosed the designs of the stickers already?
In secret. I've disclosed
in
most
secret.
Of them on Twitter.
Only...
But
did you do it on your email list?
Yeah.
That's classic Caleb style.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't subscribe to my email list, I drop goodies. So I just put in there, I put in some LiveWire news. And then at the end, I was like, hey, and if you want to see all the designs, reply
just,
to this email.
Just handed you that alley-oop.
A ton of, said, I know you did, totally.
Here, take this to the bucket, Caleb. Take it.
tons of people replied. It was kind of crazy. I spent a long time replying to people.
Awesome. So that's great.
Yeah, it is good. It was fun to you know, talk to a bunch of people. And you know,
you did the engagement.
Yeah, you got to get that good engagement.
You're off the charts with the engagement.
Yeah.
Good news for any future sponsors of ours. We get the engagement.
It's true. It's true. Speaking of sponsors, we're going to have a sponsorship.
We're going to have a sponsorship. Probably not on this episode, but probably on the next one.
Yep.
Is what we're thinking.
Yep.
We've been talking to a couple of different companies, and some people are interested, and watch this space. We're going to try and extract some small amounts of money from our labor.
Yeah, totally. And so we, you know, we like put together this giant list of companies that we would want to sponsor so that we could want to sponsor us so that we could just talk about how much we love these things. And not
Can we talk about the show on the show real quick?
What's that?
Can we talk about the show on the show real quick?
Yeah.
So we're reaching out to all these companies that we put on our list, and then like I get a couple of like warm responses from people. Right, where it's like, oh, this is probably going to work out. Like, yeah, we'll probably get this company to sponsor us. And then I have this thing. Do you then, and I could have asked you this off of the podcast, but I'm going to ask you on. Do you then continue to email, cold email other companies? Or do you wait for those to land and then start cold emailing other companies?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because I had this fear that we would get four companies to say yes, and we don't want to have four ads on an episode of the podcast. And then what if I committed wrong? And then, you know,
right? Yeah, so I mean, I would think that kind of like the rule of freelancing, like always be
ABC.
Not always, I'm just guessing it starts with always be, because all that kind of stuff always starts with always be.
A always B B C closing.
Yeah,
always be
like
closing.
It's never too early to be reaching out to clients, you know, to be getting clients and keeping them in a pipeline. So that, I mean, that down. I guess my stock answer would be like, no, reach out to them. And then in the off chance you have this bunch of people, you just say like, hey, right now we're booked for this month's slot. Well, let's do a four episode
we'll
run next month, you know?
Yep. Cool.
Chanel. Yeah. So that's going to be cool. So we're going to be able to, we're going to have sponsors of products that we like so that we can talk about things we actually like. And we're going
to
try our
darndest
to not just read a script and get them to let us like talk about it like humans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we are humans.
We are.
And honestly, I think they'll get more value out of us talking about things that we like.
If they know what's good for them.
If they do, you know. But yeah, that's the plans with the sponsorships. So, you know, No Plans to Merge Army, do your part and support these people when you find out who they are.
Yep. Truth.
Ba-da. You want to talk about testing?
Yeah, I do want to talk about testing.
Great. Because you had mentioned that you wanted to talk about testing, and that's such a broad topic that I'm interested to see what you have to say about it right now.
Yeah. So testing is something that I feel like I'm a pretty good tester, and I TDD almost everything for years now.
Yep.
And I feel good about it.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I don't feel good. And lately I've been not feeling good.
Go on.
About certain types of tests. So LiveWire, for instance. Everything I do in LiveWire now, I test before I do it.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a bug, I write a failing test, and then that's how it goes. And it's
very
good.
Do you have a JavaScript test suite?
What's that?
Do you have JavaScript tests?
I do. And they're actually
in
phenomenal.
Jest?
Like just today, I needed
Jest?
Jest. Jest is the runner, and then I use some actually awesome package. I forget the name. I should look it up really quick. This awesome JavaScript testing package that Kent C. Dodds, I believe.
I know him.
Yeah, I believe it's a package that he made at Facebook, and it's called DOM Testing Library.
Oh, yes. I know of that package.
Okay. Yeah. I imagine it's big in the React community. Is that?
I believe it is. I don't know it. I don't know it from experience. I know it from auditing a possible collection of packages and then opting to not use a package.
Okay. It's baller. Like, let me just say, I just wanted something that could simulate the DOM, you know, and that I could.
Right.
And it does a phenomenal job. I had a bug in, you know, if you know class list, like on an element, like dot class list, that fantastic yes. API. If you dot class list dot add and then pass in a string, like let's say you want to add border and border red, or
yep.
now in the 21st century, border red 500.
Yes.
So you want border and border red. You could say, you would think that you'd be able to say element dot class list dot add and pass in a string that says border space border red 500, right?
Yes.
It will throw an error because of the space. It'll say it
you can't have a space in a class name.
What's that?
Because you can't have a space in a class name. It's looking for one class name.
Yeah. Isn't that a little weird though? Like I would think that
No, I like that.
Yeah,
I think it's more explicit.
It's good. I do.
It's more explicit.
Yeah, you're right. But it's caught me a couple times, and in LiveWire there's a wire loading directive to like hook into the loading state. So you can do wire loading class and then specify a class that gets added when the component is loading. Mm-hmm. And I passed in two classes, a class border and border red, and then it threw that error. And so I was like, all right, well, I'll go to the test. So I went to my Jest test. I have a test called like loading.spec.js. I went down to the spot where it's like, can add loading class or whatever, like duplicated that test, renamed it like can add multi-word class loading thing, got a failure, you know, changed the assertion, got a failure, and then fixed it in, you know, the code to like split out the classes. And then got it green. Didn't even open the browser. And then I opened the browser and confirmed that it works. But
cool.
Anyway, yeah. So LiveWire is like pretty well tested JavaScript and PHP.
Remember the baseball service Dusk Suite?
Yes.
That was one of the golden moments of Caleb Porzio, I think. I think that was like a very pivotal moment in how you think about things. And I loved that thing because I inherited it and I loved it. And ever since I've wanted to again inherit an app where every interaction was tested by a Dust test suite.
Mm. Yeah. Like, that was cool. That's when I got really into Dusk and made all those contributions. And
yeah.
So that's when I made components. Mm-hmm. Like that didn't exist and I needed them. Mm-hmm. And so I made them. Bunch of other stuff. Tons of other stuff that project.
Yeah, that was a very cool moment in work. Was like, because like it was just the first time ever that I had like worked like that.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Where it's like, add this feature. Like when a credit card comes back and fails in this certain way, like it should redirect you to this component.
Yeah.
And I'm like, interesting. And then it's just like, I just kind of cobble that together in a Dusk test and then I watch the browser do it. Nice. You know? Stuff like that, I miss.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I avoid Dusk at all.
I know, you've disowned it.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. Dusk. It's better than Jest. Like, it's better than Jest testing your Vue components. I believe that. But
yeah.
But man, maintaining a Dusk suite and running them and getting fast feedback, good luck.
It's slow.
Selenium. Anything. Selenium.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I've been having some serious success in the LiveWire testing realm, and I use Orchestra Test Bench.
Yep.
You ever mess with that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Ziggy. It's great.
Ziggy uses it.
That's another one that I generally avoid, but then...
Oh, it's so good.
It is good. It is.
It's like... So I didn't know about Orchestra Test Bench, and you discover it by realizing, like, oh, I don't have an app. You know?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I need to shoot my goot. How do I test that I'm at the route that I think I'm at? Well, okay. Well, I guess that's in the router. So do I like inject the router? And they're like, no, because that needs all these dependencies from the app. So I need a spun up version of the app. And so then you like go into your test case and you start like starting Laravel in your test case, and you're like, someone must have done this already. And then you're like, wait, how does Spotsy do it? And then you go to the Spotsy packages and Orchestra Test Bench, and they're like, ah, that's how it's done. Okay, cool.
Nice.
That was my process of discovering Orchestra Test Bench.
Sweet. Yeah. It's been around forever, and I remember encountering it. I feel like Laravel used to promote it more. I don't think you can find any documentation about it now. But I recall in the past that I think Laravel might have even had a command to make a package.
Whoa.
I'm thinking this might have happened somewhere in the four realm. But
That was before my time.
So Orchestra Test Bench, for the listener, like if you're developing a Laravel package, you're just in PHP. It's just there's no Laravel. You're just in a PHP project. You can bring in PHP unit, but you don't have Laravel at all, or Laravel's test case or service providers or anything. But you're developing a Laravel package, so presumably you're offering things
you need
like
to test
maybe
it
an artisan
in context.
Command.
Yeah.
And so the natural thing to do is, well, I need to use this inside an app and write tests against it inside the app, or at least use it. So maybe, like I've done this where I've had a Laravel app dedicated to the package right next to the package.
Yep.
That's probably the common thing to do, but that's lame because you have two repositories. So Orchestra Test Bench is this thing that basically gives you, if you like dig into Orchestra Test Bench, like vendor/orchestra/testbench core, there's a Laravel folder that has a Laravel app in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're like testing against stuff, like there's a cache folder inside that folder that actually gets, you know, updated, like it's a Laravel app.
Yeah. And basically all that Orchestra Test Bench is a Laravel app that spins up, and then it registers your service providers and does whatever else you need it to do to like spin up your package.
Right.
And then it just runs PHP in it.
Yep.
Yeah, or you just run
it's
PHP.
It's pretty awesome. It doesn't give you an app directory though. It doesn't like allow you to do that. So I had to manually autoload, like deep autoload in their vendor directory, their app directory. Anyway, so I finally I could get away with mostly not having it for LiveWire, but I needed it. So I've been using it, and now it's great because I can just do artisan call and then pass in a LiveWire command and then make assertions on like files that get created and stuff.
So that's interesting. So LiveWire is decoupled enough that what were the things that forced you to need it?
It is kind of interesting.
I would have assumed that you would have needed it a year ago, you know?
Yeah, I didn't just bring it in. I did maybe halfway in, I pulled it in. Yeah, let me think. So the JavaScript stuff tested, the PHP stuff is tested. Maybe I just piecemeal pulled in like the router. I don't know. Like as I say it, it sounds weird, but basically I haven't gone like so for the there's LiveWire make. So or make live artisan make LiveWire that generates a component or two classes. The component class and then the view, the corresponding view. And so the nice way, the end-to-end way of doing that is to basically in your test do artisan call and then pass in a string that is make colon LiveWire and then let's say counter. Then make assertions that those files exist and contain certain things, whatever.
Yep.
Before, I had the make command just deferred to a parser. So there's like a make command parser class. And I just unit tested that parser class to make sure that if I pass in counter, it has a property of like class name, class path, view name, view path, stuff like that. So that was good enough for me. But
cool.
Yeah. Yeah, boy.
So anyway, you had a test. You have a topic burning a hole in your pocket.
I do.
The vibe I got.
Consider this test.
I'm open to considering.
We're in a classic Laravel app.
Classic.
Forget about Vue for a minute.
It's so hard, man. I barely know Laravel anymore.
You said, I can confirm that Daniel doesn't know Laravel anymore.
I know it. It's just like the edge case stuff that used to be like my pride and joy, like knowing all the little tips and tricks,
right,
has completely vacated my brain. And that's like crazy. New stuff has been added since I was like super all over Laravel. And so like I'm not sure what stuff is things I've forgotten and what stuff is things that have been added in the last like 2-point versions or whatever. Right. So who knows? Yeah,
that's funny.
Yeah.
We'll get to that after the testing that the Daniel JavaScript like messaged me something that I was very surprised at.
Yeah.
It's like,
anyway, carry
what
on.
Does this do? I'm like, dude.
Dude, come on, you know this.
Like, we've definitely talked about it on the podcast. I guarantee you.
We like, must have.
Definitely. So, testing. Consider this test. You have jelly beans. Mm-hmm. It's an app for managing jelly beans. And you have the Jelly Beans Jeans creation page. What's that?
The app is called Belly Jeans.
Something about that is like, I picture, you ever watch Arrested Development?
It's such a visual name.
It is.
You could just picture it.
I picture like a fat guy in short jeans.
Little tiny jeans.
Little tiny jeans. Cutoffs.
Belly jeans. So like Tobias in Arrested Development.
Yeah. Yep. The never
like
knew.
Those cutoffs. But like a larger man.
Right. A larger man. And he's completely naked, but the shorts are like, it's just like a belly cover that's jeans.
Belly jeans.
Belly jeans. Belly jeans. Is not bad.
Okay. All right. So you've got a jelly bean app called Belly Jeans.
That's right. And there's the jelly bean create page. Mm-hmm. And on it, there's a drop down of belly jean colors. Mm-hmm. And you select one, and then you name the jelly bean, and you enter a size and a weight and a flavor, and then you hit submit. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now let's TDD this feature.
Okay.
So we create a test. Let's say it's create jellybean test.php.
Yes.
First method. What's the first method in this class?
Can create jelly bean.
All right. So what does that method look like?
Well, hold on. Tell me more about... So there's a controller for this, right?
Sure.
Is this like an API controller, or are we creating it in the UI?
What's that? This is all just standard like, Blade.
Okay, it's just standard
there's
Blade.
There's like a create... There's a controller with a restful controller with a create method that returns a view and passes these colors to it. And then there's a store method and whatnot.
Yeah, so I would probably do like a feature test that basically is like can create jelly bean that just posts to the create thing and gets back a jelly bean that it expects.
Okay. Would you have any test covering the create page itself?
You mean like the HTML that's rendered?
Sure. Or like, would you have a test that's like, make sure or colors are available or can see colors in on create page or something?
I would normally not write that test unless there was some logic about the colors that they weren't just like class constants or something.
Yeah.
Because it kind of sounds like they're constants that are stored somewhere, right?
They're fixtures, so maybe they're in a table in the database. Maybe they're not.
Yeah, I don't think I would test that.
But let's say that it's like jelly bean types. There's that an admin panel, you can manage the types. And okay, it makes sense. So I found myself writing this test, and I felt like, why? Like this test was like, assert, like get the endpoint, get jellybean.create, whatever route. And then assert view has jelly bean colors and then pass in the closure and then basically assert that the whatever that object is what's in the database, jelly bean type or jelly bean colors, :, all, which is basically just redoing the implementation that's in the controller of jelly bean colors, :, all. And so I did that and I realized, I just knew like, this is dumb. This is so dumb. So I deleted that. And
you know why? It's because we don't have this. I feel like this should be a BrowserKit test.
Okay. Yeah, interesting. So,
because then you actually get a little value out of it.
What's that?
That like, then you at least get some value out of it. That like filling a form and clicking a button gives you the result in the database.
Yeah.
You know?
It is interesting. There's like because that was the way of testing in Laravel before.
I think it still should be the way. Honestly, I think it should never have gone. And like Dusk was an attempt to fill the void left by ripping BrowserKit out.
Yeah.
And it did more things than BrowserKit ever did, and it lets you test JavaScript components and stuff. But at the end of the day, like, we're kind of left with mocking or like sending a post request, right?
Yeah.
Like we can't go through and fill out the form and press the button.
Right.
You know? So at that point, all we're like, you can write a lot more tests, like tests that before would have tested something, now only test that the controller logic is the controller logic that you wrote.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. Cause I feel like I don't want to go back to that.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's...
Well, then you're just... that. I mean, that's fine. And I think that's what most people generally do. And that's what I generally do when I'm not using BrowserKit. You know?
Yeah.
There's a few times where I've pulled in BrowserKit.
Yeah, yeah.
But like...
Let's generally clarify for the user what BrowserKit testing is.
Yeah, so BrowserKit was... Before was just the, like the default test case in Laravel. And you could do things like filling a field and clicking a button and all sorts of things on the actual page.
Yep.
And so you could basically write a test that says like this. So like you visit, I think it was visit was the method. So it was like this visit, whatever, route jellybean.create. And then you would say fill jellybean color. Red, and then you would say press create, and then you could assert that that jelly bean existed.
That's a throwback, that press, the, you know, yeah, the click press. And press,
so like good,
press is for a button, click is, yeah, for an a tag. Yeah, so at the core of it is a component, symphony DOM crawler component. And so what it does is it actually, there's no Selenium running, where Dusk actually loads a browser window and does stuff. But this BrowserKit paradigm uses Symfony DOM crawler, which is just straight PHP, and it sort of does its best to pretend to be a browser, sort of. Like, it doesn't, yep, even pretend to be a browser, but it behaves in that way that you can fill in a bunch of input, you can click a button, and it'll know like what form it's under and submit the form and whatnot.
So yeah, it can't do anything with really the state of the browser.
Yeah, there's no JavaScript. There's no, I don't know what else there's none of, but yeah.
Yeah.
So it got you pretty far, and it was pretty cool because you could write these tests that now you're writing in Dusk. They were basically like the same sort of syntax, but they would run instantly. And
they're so fast.
They were so fast. They're just as fast as any other test.
Yep.
Which is pretty awesome. And then I guess we're just doing a history lesson, a Laravel testing history lesson. Then Dusk came out, and I don't know what the order of events exactly is, but I don't think
that was the order of events.
What's
this
that?
Is why I think, and I could be wrong, and someone's going to go get the GitHub commit histories and prove me wrong, but I think that BrowserKit was split off into its own thing. Well, no, it wasn't even split off into its own thing. First, it was removed in Laravel. And then the BrowserKit repo appeared because people were sad that it was gone. And it was like, okay, if you really want it, you can go pull it in from this other repo. And then Dusk came out. I'm pretty sure that was the order.
Interesting. I'm surprised that they got rid of it before Dusk. But yeah, right. So you can pull it in. It's like Laravel BrowserKit testing, and it's a,
yeah,
repository. Yeah, and somewhere in there, I think this is important to mention because Adam is the testing guy, that his like influence on the way to test in Laravel was like anti-BrowserKit testing. As far as I know, I could, yeah, be misrepresenting him, but for, mm-hmm, the most part, he was very much all his like in test-driven Laravel is like API type tests.
Yep.
Right, which is totally different than that. He doesn't like looking for things in a view. He'd rather assert that the view has a piece of data.
Yep.
Yeah, that I think that's something that maybe, like, I liked the freedom of decoupling from the presentation layer, because you can write cleaner tests and you're not depending on presentational stuff that could change.
Yeah, so the thing I like about BrowserKit test was never the asserting that you see something in a view, although that is really nice for quickly spinning up like the first instance of your application.
Yeah,
right, like your first test. It's a really good, convenient thing.
Yeah.
But But that was never the real power of it. To me, the power of it was like I got to do things like filling in fields, you know, yep. and like asserting that like I don't know. It just felt
there's a
more
gap
like,
now.
Like a user was doing something, you know?
What's that? Yeah.
The user was, it felt like the user was doing something. And we all knew that, like, you know, it didn't cover everything, right? And there could be some weird thing where, like, something happened in the browser, like jQuery did something on your page or something. Like, you know?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we knew, like, you could write a test that was, like, user is redirected to checkout page after selecting or after agreeing to terms of service, you know? And you could just say, like, user checks the agree to terms of service button, user presses confirm, assert redirect this page.
Yeah.
You know? And it was just like, ooh, that user did that thing, and then they went to the place that we thought they should.
Right. It connected more dots
like,
than the current...
A post request happened to hit this endpoint. Where did that post request come from?
Exactly.
What page generated that post request? Now I have to go, like, search the DOM or search the routes file for, like, you know, like, there's all kinds of ways you could have ended up at this API endpoint. This test doesn't tell me how I got here, you know?
Yeah.
That was the thing I miss.
Yeah, it's true. I feel the same way that less things are connected now. So in this example, our jelly beans, create jelly beans test.php, in the way that you'd currently write it, I generally write a test that makes sure that it can see the create page. And that test always feels really lame to me. But I honestly think it's one of the most important tests that, like, it actually does a significant thing. It renders the page, you know, like it goes to the controller and renders all the DOM. So all your templating, there's no errors in your templating, at least for the happy path. Like, you know that.
Yeah.
Just from one test that says this arrow get and then assert successful.
Yeah. I think that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't do it, but I get it.
Yeah. I'm just sort of formulating that myself right now. I think it's odd to assert the view has stuff. I'm not a huge fan of the assert view has thing.
Me neither.
Yeah. Maybe some things, if you do lots of compositional work inside the controller, like in the farther up, like you do like
your
data composition.
Yeah. And especially if you're doing like, yeah, like weird string manipulation or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that.
And then you could assert like view has. Yeah.
Like we did a thing recently on that. What did we say that the app was? It was like a pizza place finding app or something like that.
I don't remember.
The app I was working on in React Native. In that app, one of the things that we did is like depending on what country you were in, we returned distances either as miles or kilometers.
Okay. Yeah.
And so that's the type of thing where like asserting that like the view gets something, you know, is like valuable because it's like, oh yeah, like there's like four different things involved here and like any of them could break. So like the easiest way to test this is just to say like, oh, like this user is in Germany. They visit this page, assert that they see 75 kilometers.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, all right, cool. That tests that we are able to detect their location. We're able to do, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yep. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So, the assert view has thing feels off to me, especially if I'm rewriting stuff that I wrote inside the controller.
Mm-hmm.
But I did sort of realize that. That was something that I came upon that I was like, I really think that just loading a freaking page is super valuable. Like, some of the most valuable tests. It's literally the most flexible test you can write. You'll
the
never need
okay.
to change it.
Assert okay is a great method.
Yeah. What's his name? Jason McCreary just tweeted that assert okay and assert successful are different.
Yes.
I never knew that. I just always assert successful.
Yeah. Assert okay fails on a 201.
Yeah, but assert okay is just 204.
Yeah.
And then successful is any 200?
Yeah, I don't know. I know that 200 is green for assert okay and 201 is red.
Gotcha. Weird. Why? Why does that exist?
I don't know.
Weird. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's one of those weird ones that I saw that and I was like, that's lame. Nobody's going to remember that. That's dumb. I'm sure there's a reason.
Okay? Oh, but, the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, the difference is dumb. Yeah, the difference is very dumb.
So A, I think that's really valuable, and I think I just needed to get that out there. And then the right, those post tests where there's that disconnect, like make sure that the page exists and can load, and then you're writing a test that just hits the post request. It doesn't actually submit a form or anything, so you don't know. But I guess like I feel pretty good about I feel good about not testing it that browser kit way where you submit the form. Like I don't want to do that anymore.
So the thing that fails for me is like the tests as documentation of how the app works. You know, like it starts to lose, because the beautiful thing about those tests is like, and like maybe this is just how I think, you know, and it might just differ from how other people think, but like I want to know, like for example, I am working on a project that you have worked on previously right now.
Yeah.
And we've talked about it on the show before. It was the one where there was like a big, long, interactive like quiz type of thing, or
a wizard.
Big long wizard. Thank you. There's a big long interactive wizard, and you could be at multiple steps in the wizard at various points, and you have to save that state and all that other stuff.
Yep.
And so when I'm looking at this code, I want to know what view did they start on, what interaction did they do, what view did they end up on, because mm-hmm. that lets me debug a lot of things quickly. Yeah. Right. Whereas a test that just says a post request came into this endpoint doesn't tell me what page generated that post request.
It's interesting. I think there's a case for having a...
I don't think that those tests are bad, but those feel more like API tests to me, maybe.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think there should be a this... So anytime... I think there's a case for this arrow get jellybeans.create arrow yes. post. Well, I guess now it returns a response. So then another this arrow post jellybeans.store.
Yes.
Because, well, one, there's an actual practical benefit that if you don't have the dot get and there's, if you redirect back, it won't know where to redirect back to. We're in a real life scenario to redirect back to that page. And I've hit that before and I've had to do it and I've always felt bad about it. I'm like, oh, do I really have to add this get request before? But it really is more realistic. One, it's better documentation. It's like, go to this page.
What about a this.from?
Like just as an alias for .get, yeah. But that you can chain on the post so it doesn't return a test
and,
response.
And it just returns this, yeah, instead of
that's pretty returning. Cool. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, me too.
I'm going to be straight up with you right now. I dig it.
Kayla, remember when on our podcast we used to come up with what methods that we wanted in Laravel and then make pull requests and get them in?
I do.
It's been a while since we've done that.
It is. We should bring it back.
It's been a hot minute. Maybe we should do a this.from.
Yeah, submit it to Laravel and then they'll yell at us and say, sorry, you can't use JavaScript dot notation in PHP. And we'll get
no
denied.
Plans to merge.
No plans to merge.
Dude, it's been forever since I wrote a Laravel pull request. I should do one.
Yeah, me too.
It's been great.
You should do it. I think this from is a great thing. And I've definitely had to do the this get. So one, it's better documentation. Two, it's more realistic. Like it actually loads the page that you'll then be posting from.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two ones. So you get all the redirection juice. And it's good. It's very good. I like it a lot.
I like it. I like it a lot.
So that's one thing that's good. And assert, this is the thing. When you're testing, like, so if you do currently in Laravel, if you do an assert redirect to or whatever, I don't know. I think it's just assert redirect, right? So you want to make sure that when the post is created, when the jelly bean's created, you're redirected to the jelly bean factory landing page.
This is a whole other problem with testing.
What?
Multiple redirects.
Why?
I've just run into this recently where like, I forget what my solution was. I ended up finding like that there was a good way to do it, but
I have the way.
Like, by default, it only tests the first redirect.
I know. It's bogus.
It's so dumb. It's so dumb.
And you can add follow redirects, and it will follow the redirects. But it will, it never loads the final page that you're on or something.
Yeah, it's, I forget. It's been like a week or two since I hit this, and I was like, when I was doing it, I was like, this is dumb.
It's dumb. Like, it's very dumb. And yeah, so when you're basically doing an assert, right, let's not even worry about that actual problem that you're describing. Anytime you're assert redirecting, you're just making, basically all Laravel's doing is seeing that the response that came back has the location header of where you want to go, which the browser will then do the redirect.
Well, not only that, it also asserts that it is a redirect response.
Sure. 301.
Right. Oh, this is what it is. This is what it is. I think when you do follow redirects, it actually does load the last page, and so then that comes back 200. And so it then assert redirect fails. I think that's what it was.
Interesting.
There was something weird like that. That was like the type of thing I ended up. So it's like I can follow redirects,
okay,
in which case assert redirect fails.
Yeah.
Or I can assert redirect, in which case I only get the first redirect, and if there's multiple chained redirects, it fails.
The whole redirection system is messed up, and it's a hard problem. I went down this rabbit hole, and I talked to Taylor about it at some point, but I ended up basically writing, and I forget if Keith helped me. He might have. I don't know.
He's a helpful guy.
What's that?
He's a helpful guy. He probably helped.
Yeah. So there's this, it's actually in the project you're working on, I believe. It's like a macro for following redirects, but it actually does. And then it actually, the thing that I want is I want you to follow the redirects and actually load the page you end up on.
What I want is a guarantee.
Know what I'm saying?
No more attempts on my father's life. Yes, I do understand what you're saying, and that is beautiful.
Because right now, we're just testing that you got the redirect header. We're not testing that the destination loaded. And like I said, that is the value of these PHP tests, is we can of using Blade, is we can test all of this templating, all the templating wiring, like instantly, you know, which is killer.
Mm-hmm. So this is interesting. You are straddling a fence that I'm not sure I understand why you're straddling it.
Okay.
You are talking out of both sides of your mouth, I think. I think on the one hand, you're saying, I don't like to assert that the view has things. I don't like to test whatever, whatever. Right? Which,
yeah,
fair enough. I don't really like that either. But then on the other hand, you're saying, I love to be able to test all the templating wiring by asserting that the page loaded correctly.
Yeah.
Which, to me, one is just a slight extension of the other. And then on the third hand, which you're a very strange three-handed man, on the third hand, you're saying, I don't care about testing all of that templating wiring up front. I'm totally fine with a post request appearing out of thin air.
No, I mean, I like the from.
I like from too.
I did.
That's all I want. I just want to contextualize my tests, you know? I want them to live inside the rich history of an app's story, you know? Because we're all storytellers here, Caleb.
It's true. So
I'm sorry. I just got going and I couldn't stop.
So, Deagle.
Yeah.
Focus with me.
I'm with you.
Be with me. Be here now.
Gong.
So you're right. So I don't like the assert view has, because it just asserts that the view has the thing and nothing more. So what I do like, and this is going to be crazy, and this is where Mr. Wathen and I differ, I believe. I do like assert seeing. I like to do a little bit of assert seeing. So on my Jelly Beans page, I load a Jelly Bean page that shows the Jelly Bean, or, all right, here's, you know assert C in Laravel?
Yeah. I thought that was, when you were saying assert view has, I was picturing assert C.
Oh, no. Decole.
Oh, you're testing, assert view has actually tests the data that is passed to the view.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pointless. No one cares about that.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would only consider, based on your current argument, I would consider that you would be a guy who loved to assert C.
Yeah, I'd love to assert C.
Yeah, okay, that fits with everything I know about you.
Good, okay, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I try to... sometimes it's just not a good thing to do, but honestly, in general, it's more just the theory of coupling to the view that mm-hmm. is a hang-up. In reality, if you have a Jelly Beans
it's fine.
Show page, you're going to freaking show the Jelly Bean title on the page. End of story.
Yeah, and you should...
You're never going to not show the title of the Jelly Bean on the on the show Jelly Bean page.
I fundamentally agree with you.
You know? And there's a bunch of instances like that. Like if you're looking for stuff in a dropdown, just assert C. You know?
Yeah.
Just make sure that, you know, I'd rather do that than assert view has, because like when I assert C, it does the templating and I get more juice out of my tests, you know?
Yeah. You get the juice.
It's all about the juice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Do you know that Chance the Rapper song, Juice?
No, probably not. Maybe.
It's an incredible song that I think you should listen to after this. And we should put it as our outro music or something. Right. Anyway, continue.
So that's one thing. This has been good. Mm-hmm. This has been good. I got another weird testing one for you. Go on.
I think you're internally consistent, and I don't think there's any reason to really fight you that hard. I like what you're doing.
Good. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. So, DeCole.
Yes, sir?
You got a controller method.
You sure do. You sure do.
And it fires a job that does stuff.
Okay.
Okay. You can write a test. So, you know what I really like?
Mm.
I like tests that test a whole interaction. Mm-hmm. So in my test, why don't we just set this here job queue driver to sync?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Right? And then why don't we just write a test here that hits an endpoint?
Yes.
Gets a response back and makes sure that all the work happened.
All the side effects the work of the job that was in happened. The job. Yes.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
That's the correct thing to do.
But
don't hit
it's
me with
not
butt.
The way it behaves in real life.
Put your butt away, sir.
What's that?
I said, put your butt away, sir.
It's not the way it behaves.
What do you mean? No, I just wrote a test like this the other day.
So in real life, jobs get queued.
Yeah.
And then the request finishes.
Uh-huh.
And then the job goes and does its thing.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I could try to fabricate an example of why. So let's say that in the controller, like the job sets some state to something. You know what I'm saying? Like in real life, the work of the job happens after the work of the rest of the controller.
I do know what you're saying. So what we should do, we should have a job driver... Ooh, Caleb, more methods, more test methods. Here's what you do.
Okay.
With job effects, or assert job effects.
Oh, so it cues the job until the end of the
assert job
response.
Effects takes a closure, and then that closure gets passed this. And so then you have all of the test method assertions available to you inside that closure.
Yeah.
And then it runs that closure, like... So then it like runs the whole chain. It like stores. Can you even store closures in memory in PHP? I don't think you can. JavaScript has ruined me.
You can store closures into stuff.
I don't know if you would be able to. You might have to just like keep passing it along and passing it along. But anyway, that'd be really cool that you could like. You could basically store that closure, and then later, you run the job in some sort of a. Synchronous but at the end way.
Interesting.
Like you would have just a test driver that's basically like it's not async, but it's like it just defers it until everything else has happened. Like on teardown it runs the job and then runs whatever closures were in the with job effects stuff.
Yeah. That's good. That is the best way. And here's why. Because
hit me.
Well, point A, we know the problem. Solution A, which is sync driver. The problem is it's not the way it behaves in real life.
Yes. And so there could be situations where something was required, like something wasn't nullable, but because this thing happened to have been created just in time, it got set, and so you didn't find out that thing needed to be nullable all along.
That's a perfect example. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
Nice. Situation B. Is that you write a test that uses the normal driver, some deferment or fakes jobs or job whatever without jobs or trade, something like that.
Yes.
Runs the thing, ignores the job. Yes. Maybe. Oh, you do an assert that it was dispatched.
Yes.
So you make sure that the job was dispatched, right?
Common.
That's the one end of
common.
It. And then you have another test that tests the functionality of the job, right?
Common, yes.
But you don't... So that is the other solution. But yes. The problem with that is that you don't have the setup of what to pass
the
into
context.
The job.
Right, exactly.
That you automatically get for free from...
Once again, we are robbed of context by making things so testable.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. So your solution is perfect. Something that gives you a way to run the job after the complete controller run, the complete request run, and then make assertions after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that'd be cool.
I think it would be cool too. Dude, we're covering ground here.
Dude, we've like... yeah, we've done a lot. Done a lot today.
These are good things.
These are good things. I'm... Just keep thinking about that. I'm trying to find like a hole to poke in it. Yeah, you just do it on teardown of the request.
Heck yeah, man. It's great.
I like it.
It's really good. Yeah. It needs to happen.
This is good. This is good. Yeah, someone should do that. Let's assign that one to the audience because that's going to take more time and work. Audience, meet you back here in a week. We'll do the small thing. You do the big thing.
Yep. Perfect.
Find each other on Twitter and pair.
So that's good. Any
that
other
is good.
Any other testing things we got going on here?
Just the redirects, man. The redirects are not. So that's three things we hit. We hit redirects. We hit. Man, we did cover ground, sir.
Yeah, we did.
Whew.
So when you have, let's say that you walk into an app and it's. It's got oodles of reports.
A priest and a programmer walk into an app. Yes.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of reports, sure.
Tons of reporting. Completely untested.
Yep. Oof.
Try to write. What do you do? How do you test reporting? Reporting's one of those things that's... There's so much to test, and you run such a high risk... of tightly coupling and or rewriting like program logic inside your tests for the reporting. It's one of those things that's like, I want to just snapshot test reports, like a generated PDF or something like that, or a CSV
that's
or something.
That's actually kind of a sexy idea.
And just snapshot the whole thing, make sure the reports work. Snapshot tests, I got this love-hate with them because they really do, they're phenomenal, but they also suck because they can contain errors, of course.
Yeah.
And then if you want to update it, you have to like regenerate the snapshot, and then you're not going
to
go through
to trust,
and test every... What's that?
You have to trust people, too.
Who? Like other developers?
Other programmers.
Yeah, it's true.
And like, this is like, we as Titan often get pulled into projects where like, sometimes like there was a test suite, but like no one has updated the test suite in a year and a half. And like, there's this like totally out of date test suite that works on part of the app or whatever,
yeah.
You know? And like, so we're supposed to like whip stuff into shape, but there's still other developers who I know for sure based on their actions don't run the tests.
Yeah.
Or when they do run the tests, do whatever is required to make the test go green, including like deleting tests or commenting out sections, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and so if I'm in one of those situations, I want to write tests that are more explicit than snapshot tests.
It's true.
Because I know that they're going to overwrite the snapshot with a dirty snapshot at some point.
Yeah. It's almost like if you, like, it's for rerouting traffic. Like if you're a construction worker or something, it's a detour. Like you got to work on this chunk of the road. So you put in, you know, it's like scaffolding or something. It's something that's
like those big metal plates that they put over the hole.
What's that?
It's like when they cut a hole in your road and then they put those big metal plates over it for you to drive over.
It's that, yeah. Like you don't want to leave it. You want to put it there so people can keep driving You want to put it there. I mean, this it's not a great analogy. There's probably a better one. But
sorry, it's just happening on my road right now.
So is it still going on, the road thing?
Oh, man.
Probably for a long time.
Can I tell you what? A lady's suing them because they got they jackhammered too much and they got dust all over her solar panels.
Ooh. Just anyway, hose it off.
Continue. Yeah, but it's a whole thing. I don't know.
Anyway, snapshot tests are phenomenal. If you want to do a big refactor, pop in a snapshot test, but then take it out. Like if you leave it in, it's like leaving scaffolding somewhere. Convert it to meaningful tests. In fact, there's probably good arguments to be made that you shouldn't even do that to begin with.
Is there?
Like why not write the expressive test to begin with and then just refactor?
Because you don't understand the business logic.
It's true, but then if you're removing the snapshot test, you're just leaving it.
Okay, no, let me make an argument. I'm a contractor. I get pulled into an app a code base that's existed for 5 years.
Yeah.
You know? There's tons of code. Nobody really understands how it works.
Yeah.
You know? And my job is to, fix some deep internal part of the app.
Yeah.
That touches everything. You know?
Yeah.
And so I write snapshot tests because it would take me a year to understand this app fully, you know? So I'll just write snapshot tests so I can go in and do my work. And then 3 months later, by that point, I probably understand enough about what I've been doing to write an expressive test.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, I didn't even know what I was doing. So I couldn't write an expressive test because I hadn't learned the environment yet.
Yep. Yeah, you're right. 100%. I agree.
So refactoring obscure code.
It's a tool.
Or
it's
dead
another
code.
Tool.
Reviving dead code. That's what it should be.
What's that?
You know, if you take that definition of dead code that just says code that's not tested.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Legacy code, right?
Or sorry, legacy, not dead. If you take that, so reviving legacy code, which means bringing it into the light of being tested and part of the code base that's tested.
Yeah.
Snapshots are a good tool for that because they prove that the legacy code still does what it's always done and that we haven't broken anything. And they also sort of denote it's like those orange men at work signs that they hold by the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of denotes we're doing stuff over here.
Exactly.
We're refactoring. We're working on bringing these things into the light.
It's a construction zone.
But I don't think it's necessarily that useful for new feature development.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Well, it's what do you snapshot to? You know,
right.
It only works. It doesn't really work for future development. Well.
Well, it can if there's other people's API endpoints and stuff involved.
Oh, I got you. Snapshots on the other PHP VCR type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a whole other thing.
That's a whole other thing. You're not testing the snapshot.
Which is fun itself.
You're using the snapshot.
And I actually think I much prefer PHP VCR. They're two totally different things. Snapshot assertions and snapshots being used
as fixtures.
As fixtures, exactly. And I'm fine with the fixture thing.
Hell yeah.
So, Decol.
Dude, I really like that idea. No, I'm not done. I really like the idea that you could tell your team like you could just put your snapshots in a separate suite, right? Maybe not. But you could basically tell your team, if there's a snapshot test somewhere, it's being worked on, right?
Okay.
Oh, man, I just read this. Speaking of Kent C. Dodds, our good friend, Kent C. Dodds just wrote this big testing Medium post that I was reading right before the show.
Ooh.
And one of the things that they were talking about is that Facebook deletes tests that don't test a specific way. I forget exactly what he said. Basically, that if you want... Oh, come on. Oh, man. I can't... Basically, they have some standard for tests. He was outlining what the standards for tests should be, right?
Yeah.
And then he was saying that Facebook has a rule that if there's a test that doesn't meet this standard... That they just delete it.
Cool.
And I forget what the standard was, but that kind of seems like what you could do with snapshots is you tell people, like, snapshot tests should only go in places where we don't have full test coverage and we're actively refactoring.
Yeah.
If either of those two things isn't the case, you delete the snapshot test.
Yep.
Because, like, it didn't serve any purpose anyway.
Right. Yeah, I dig. I'll have to read that.
Hmm. It's a big one.
Cool. That's good. It probably means that's it's good. Got some meat on its bones.
Probably thoughtful, yeah.
So, DeCole.
Yes.
Real quick, tell me.
Real quick, yeah.
About you not knowing Laravel anymore and higher order methods.
Dude, so here's the deal. For the last year-ish, I have worked primarily as a JavaScript developer. And always in context of a Laravel app, you know?
Yeah.
But often in situations where I knew React better than anyone else on the project.
Yep.
And so if there's a lot of React work to do, I would do it. And if there was, like, big Laravel work to do, it made more sense for other people to do it. You know?
Yeah.
And the Laravel work I have been doing, and, like, it's not like I haven't been doing Laravel. Like, I've made Laravel PRs in the last while.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
But most of those apps, the business logic of the Laravel app was very simple. You know? It's just, like, a little bit eloquent, really basic stuff. You return it to the front end, and then now there's a React app there doing things with it.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's been quite some time since I've, like, really dug into, like, a complex Laravel app. And working on the wizard again, the wizard recently, app. Like, there's complexity there, like,
yep.
In a big bad way. And so it's been real interesting because it's like, and also, like, it's your, a lot of it is your code.
Yeah.
And you are more apt to do things in an interesting way, you know? So there's things that are, like, not what I would call, like, the beaten path of, like, how you would write something, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it's not how I would default to writing something.
Yeah.
And, like, often after I deal with it for a little bit, I'm like, oh, this is cool. I'm glad it's like this.
Mm-hmm.
But there are things where I'm like,
yeah,
like that no whole doubt. Step, the whole step calculation thing.
That is what's up.
Is,
I just want to tell you.
Saying, not saying it's bad.
No.
Not saying it's bad. What I am saying is it is obtuse to me.
Yeah.
It still is taking me time to understand how it works.
It's the savior of the world.
And
I recently actually revisited it because I still have
really?
The project locally, like yeah. Just a couple days ago.
So if you talk about how that works.
It's phenomenal because the setup thing.
Yeah, the setup steps
yeah.
.php or whatever.
So if you're in a, you have a wizard and you and the wizard, let's say there's five steps in the wizard and each step builds up the user. It adds on new tables to the user object and all sorts of things happen as the user progresses through this mm-hmm. wizard.
So it's like you're applying for something.
Yeah. And so you want to write tests for every step.
Yep.
And there's lots of very intricate needs, like specific test permissions where a user can only go forward and can't go back except if they're on step 5, then they can go to step 2. But then when they go forward from step 2, they need to go back to step 5. So there's mm-hmm. all sorts of very, very crazy... Actually, now that I'm re-describing it, I think you might be talking about something different than I
nope,
am.
Nope, that's what I'm talking about.
I know, but I think what I revisited was maybe not what I'm describing. So one of the chief problems of writing tests around all these things is that I found myself writing factories where I would have some... like, for a test, I would need to get somebody to step 5, you know?
Yep.
So I'd have to do all this factory work. And basically... Mm-hmm. I'm hard coding the results of getting someone to step 5. And so if I change something in step 1, now the factory stuff to get the person to step 5 is out of sync, you know?
Yep.
So you're dealing with this problem. So basically what I did was I abstracted the step, all of the logic of each step that used to live inside controllers, I put them mm-hmm. inside their individual step objects. And mm-hmm. each step object is kind of immutable in a sense. Like it has a, yep. like, it's like go.
It has an authorized method, which is like, am I allowed to see this
yeah,
step?
Yeah, right.
And then it has a is complete method, yep. which says, have I already completed this step? And then it has a complete method, which yeah. is like a hook for when you complete that step.
Right, where you pass a user in, presumably, and it passes you back whatever a transformed user.
Right.
So inside my factories for tests, I could actually put a fake factory user through each step.
Yes.
By like using, so the factory is using the exact same code that the actual production code uses. So for factory purposes, it is killer. Like that was a huge boon to productivity for me and just security in general. Now that you're talking about it, I'm remembering the absolute hell it was to get step authorization working properly and
right.
make sense. That is mind-boggling. And let me tell you, it's gotten way better than it was, but it's still bonkers.
I am in the process of adding steps in the middle.
Oh, yeah. I tried to make it so that it would be almost as easy as adding it into an array.
So, yes, you did try that. Here's the thing that's missing, and I think this is what I'm going to do, and this is a great sanity check to be able to check if I'm crazy before I do this. Do you think I can add a hook to the front of the step that does work when a step is reached instead of doing the completed hook? Or, sorry, leave the completed hook as it, or the complete method mm-hmm. as it is,
mm-hmm.
but I kind of want like an onload method for each step that isn't going to get called on any of the other ones. But in this instance, like this is a step that on completing is sometimes going to redirect back to itself over and over and over again until you've completed all of the requirements.
Oh my gosh. I don't know. I don't know.
All right.
There's crazy cool. things. I remember also like
there's
some
so
steps.
Many crazy things.
Weren't actually visual, like they would be combined yeah. into one page. So like
uh-huh.
they each one was their own page, and then the requirements changed, and it became yep. like three steps were in one page. But mm-hmm. they still, so it got crazy. But I tried to handle it as best I could, and I remember feeling decent about it, like feeling like
no, it's a good design. I just like approaching it with like, huh? Well, this is what I know I need to do. So here's like an abstracted example of what needs to happen. So you're applying for something, let's call it a car loan, mm-hmm. right? You're applying for a car loan. Now imagine that one of the steps is like, we pull your credit history.
Yeah.
Right. And what comes back is like a series of past delinquent accounts.
Yep.
Right. And then, so I'm adding an explanation step where you get to tell me, you get to type in a text field what happened with each of those delinquent accounts.
Yeah.
Right. And so when you submit that form, if you have more delinquent accounts that you haven't yet submitted that form for, I want you to stay on the explanation step until you yeah. have now written an explanation for every delinquent account.
Yeah.
And then I can pass you on to the we'll review your delinquent account explanations
right.
page. So it's an interesting one because it's just, it's like, what do you call it?
Recursion.
It's recursive, right? So it's an interesting little thing. So I kind of want to do some work on the front end of that
yeah.
before the user submits the form and then save that complete method for submitting forms.
Yeah, interesting. Makes sense.
But anyway, the thing I didn't understand, which was very interesting,
yeah.
this is what we ended up messaging, higher order collection methods. So sick. So you used something where it's like you have a collection of things and you did arrow map as an attribute, not as a method, just the word map,
mm-hmm.
and then another arrow, and then a method that was on the child things that were getting mapped over. And I was like, okay, looking at this, I know what it does, but I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah.
Like, I thought you had to just call the map function and then write a closure and then do the whole thing. And I must have known it because it seems like the type of thing we would have talked about on here many times.
Yeah, we totally have. And one of my early hot tip tweets was like,
"Come into Laravel."
Eloquent has just gotten so good, and it was this like how you would do it in with the query builder, or how you would do it in CodeIgniter or something, and then it was like how you do it in Eloquent, and it turned like 15 lines into one line, and it used like a couple higher order methods, and it was just beautiful.
It's so sick.
But yeah, it is absolutely beautiful.
I don't know why I didn't, like, it was one of those things where, like, I'm almost embarrassed to not know about it, except that I'm so excited to now know about it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's crazy.
It's totally crazy. So to explain to a user who might not understand or know, so if you have a collection, so like in Eloquent, if you have user arrow car loans, sticking with car loans, or car loan applications or whatever, and you want to see if any of them are denied. User arrow car loan applications, and you could do arrow map.
And then you have a function.
Yeah, let's just pretend that you do arrow map, and then you have a callback that accepts an application, and then you return application arrow is denied, like a field called is denied. And then when that's done, after that, maybe you do a filter that's like...
No, you could just do contains true.
Contains true? Yeah, okay. Right, yeah. Contains...
So you could say, if this array... Right. Yeah. If this new collection that is just all of the true or false of whether an application is denied, if it contains any trues, then we know that you can't proceed.
Right. So then arrow contains true, and then you know if you have any denials or not. So you could instead just do user applications arrow map, and instead of it being a function, it's just like a property map, and then you arrow on that property. So arrow map arrow
is denied
pluck to, or right, yeah.
Oh,
well, interesting. Could
I'm
you?
I'm pretty sure.
Just arrow is denied.
Arrow is denied.
Oh, baller.
That's the magic of it.
Yeah,
that's why
right.
It's so crazy.
Oh my gosh,
look at the screenshot
bizarre.
I sent you.
So you could do, right, so arrow map, arrow, just the field that you want it to map to, and then arrow contains.
Contains.
So the crazy
true.
Thing to understand about higher order stuff is that it's only one level deep, so you arrow map, then you're in a different context. You're in the context, you're pretending that you're inside a loop, and then after that, you pretend that you're
after
back
outside the
loop.
After the first method, you're back
loop.
In the old context.
It's crazy. And it returns this higher order proxy, and if you're ever looking for a good code dive, it's a good one.
Whew,
it's actually one of the craziest. There's a couple things in Laravel that are just like, who
and they all have
the
to do
freaking
with
thought of this? Is it Taylor just thinking of stuff?
What? It's all fluency stuff too.
It's like who thought that this could even be possible? You know?
Yeah. Well, and that's what I was looking at. It. I was like, okay, I know what this does. I cannot, for the life of me, figure out how this works.
I know. It's like, crazy. It's crazy. It basically map returns an instance of higher order proxy, which is a proxy object that stores the state and accepts a whatever you then call on it. It will then internally call to what's underneath it and then return the results. So like it makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It's just like,
but it's
buck
bonkers.
Wild.
It's totally bonkers. It's phenomenal. It's one of my favorite parts of the Laravel codebase, no doubt.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of higher order methods. There's map, there's filter, there's there's one of my favorite, flat map
up.
Is just
oh,
the
flat
bee's
map.
Knees
a,
for higher order stuff.
Remember, you know what I used today?
What'd
Hadn't
you
used in a while? Map with keys.
Yeah, I actually used that quite a bit.
It's a good one.
I used it today myself, actually.
It's a real good one. And like, it's weird because you return an array, but it doesn't stay an array.
Yeah.
Like, it gets flattened out, but just because of, like, the way the language is, like, you have to return an array.
I think of
but
it like,
cool.
Like, for each, when you for each with an associative array and you blank, arrow blank, you know, blank key.
Yeah, because it's basically like a tuple.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it is.
But it's like, we don't have them, so we just use an array.
Yep. Straight up. Well, sweet, D. Cole. This was a good episode.
Yeah, Dude, this one has been dense. You should give this one another listen. Because yeah. I'm going to listen to this a few times, I think.
This is definitely... This is a good one. This is like
there's
classic no plans to merge. Look at me. I'm not even saying 20% time anymore.
Look at you. I'm so proud of you, Caleb.
Just classic, you know, lots of code, lots of real life Laravel stuff.
You know what we did in this one?
What did we do?
Came with the juice. We came with the juice.
What do you mean?
We got the juice in this one. It's a juicy one.
You're right. We pumped it. Full of juice.
I got the juice. I got the juice.
So before I leave, I'll leave the audience with one more pleasant sound. Wait. Hold on. The pleasant sound is Daniel laughing. Here we go. Did I already do that last time?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. But it was sitting here and I was like, who doesn't love this
sound?
Oh my
God, that was so beautiful. You just like punched your microphone. I'll leave the audience with one more pleasant sound. Oh, it was gold. All right, excellent. I like it. This is a good episode. Good podcast.
It's a good episode. Check out the stickers, everyone, because I was going to have a fundraiser dinner for myself to fund my open source efforts, like a gala.
At Laracon?
Yeah. Yes. I was going to actually at the Waldorf.
Astoria?
Yeah. Yep.
That would be so sick.
Yep. Waldorf salads for everyone.
I would fund your open source efforts.
Yeah, so I mean that's what I was planning on doing, but it's a lot of overhead, so instead I made stickers to sell. So
cool.
So I encourage everyone to buy my stickers.
Very, very cool. Speaking of Laracon.
And if you do, Daniel will sing you a song for everyone who buys stickers.
No. I better get a
cue outro music. Now
where's my money? Speaking of Laracon, it's very soon.
Dude. Let's not talk
about
Laracon.
I'm so psyched. I'm gonna see you soon, Caleb.
I know. I'm excited for that. We'll
be seeing you
over here.
We'll be seeing you. you're launching you're launching a Livewire at Laracon.
Yep.
You're doing a talk about it.
Which, by the way, Livewire is now everything I ever wanted it to be.
Oh yeah.
Just so you know, audience.
That's so cool.
I was talking with Decoy earlier, working out some stuff. There was one missing piece, one last missing piece. But it has been resolved.
It has been resolved. Do you want to tell them what it was?
No.
No? All right. No. See you at Laracon, guys.
All right.
And probably next week between now and then. But
truth.
TTYL.
All righty. Cue outro music now.
Boo.
Boo.
Hell yeah.